Chapter 3. Hell's Asshole was no place for a king. Appropriately, the hole was the lowest extremity of the jail Cenarians called the Maw. The entrance to the Maw was a demonic visage carved from jagged black fire glass. Prisoners were marched straight into its open mouth, down a ramp often made slick by fear-loosened bladders. In the hole itself, the stone carver's art had been eschewed for the sheer visceral fears evoked by tight spaces, the dark heights, the eerie howling of the wind rising from the depths, and the knowledge that every prisoner with whom you shared the hole had been deemed unworthy of a clean death. The hole was unrelentingly hot and reeked of brimstone and human waste in its three forms: their shit, their dead, and their unwashed flesh. There was only a single torch, far overhead, on the other side of the grate that separated the human animals from the rest of the prisoners in the Maw. 11 men and 1 woman shared the hole with Logan Gyre. They hated him for his knife, and for his powerful body, and for his cultured accent. Somehow, even in this nightmare menagerie of freaks and twists, he was different. Isolated. Logan sat with his back to the wall. There was only one wall because the hole was a circle. In the middle was a hole 5 paces wide that opened into a chasm. The chasm's sides were perfectly vertical, perfectly sheer fire glass. There was no guessing how deep it was. When the prisoners kicked their waste into the hole, they heard no sound. The only thing that escaped the hole was the deep stench of a sulfuric hell and the intermittent wailing made by the wind, or the ghosts, or the tortured souls of the dead, or whatever it was that made that sanity-breaking sound. At first, Logan had wondered why his fellows would defecate against the wall, and only later, if ever, kick the feces down the hole. The first time he had to go, he knew you'd have to be insane to squat near the hole. You couldn't do anything down here that made you vulnerable. When one inmate had to move past another, he shuffled quickly and suspiciously, snarling and hissing and cursing in such strings that the words lost meaning. Pushing another inmate into the hole was the easiest way to kill. What made it worse was that the shelf of rock that circled the hole was only 3 paces wide and the ground slanting down toward the hole. That shelf was all the world to the holers. It was the thin, slippery slope to death. Logan hadn't slept in the 7 days since the coup. He blinked his eyes. 7 days. He was starting to get weak. Even Finn, who got most of the last meat, hadn't eaten in 4 days.
"You're bad luck, 13,
Finn said, glaring at him over the chasm.
"They ain't fed us since you got here."
Finn was the only one who called him 13. The rest had accepted the name he'd given himself in a moment of madness. King.
"You mean since you ate the last guard?" Logan asked. "You think that might have something to do with it?"
That got chuckles from everyone, except Nasher, the simpleton, who just smiled blankly through teeth filed to sharp points. Finn said nothing, just kept chewing and stretching the rope in his hands. The man already wore an entire coil of rope that was so thick it almost obscured a frame as sinewy as the ropes themselves. Finn was the most feared of the inmates. Logan wouldn't call him the leader, because that would have implied that the inmates had a social order. The men were like beasts. Shaggy, their skin so dirty he couldn't guess what color they had been before their imprisonment. Eyes wide, ears alert to the slightest sound. Everyone slept light. They'd eaten 2 men the day he'd arrived.
arrived. I jumped him. I could have had a nice, clean death. Now I'm here forever, or at least until they eat me. Gods! They'll eat me! He was distracted from his rising horror and despair by motion on the other side of the hole. It was Lily. She alone didn't cling to the wall. She was heedless of the hole, fearless. A man reached out and grabbed her dress.
"Not now, Jake!"
she told the one-eyed man. Jake held on for a moment more, but when she lifted an eyebrow at him, he dropped his hand and cursed. Lily sat down next to Logan. She was a plain woman, her age indeterminate. She could have been 50, but Logan guessed she was closer to 20. She still had most of her teeth. She didn't speak for a long time. Then, when the interest in why she had moved had subsided, she scratched at her crotch absently and said,
"What you gonna do?"
Her voice was young. "I'm going to get out, and I'm going to take back my country," he said.
"You hold on to that king shit," she said. "Make 'em think you're crazy. I see you looking round like a little boy lost. You're living with animals. You want to keep living? You be a monster. You want to hold on to something? You bury it deep. Then do what you gotta."
She patted his knee and went over to Jake. In moments, Jake was rutting on top of her. The animals didn't care. They didn't even watch.
The madness was taking him. Dorian stayed in the saddle only from instinct. The external world seemed distant, unimportant, buried under mist, while the visions were near, vital, vibrant. The game was on, and the pieces were moving, and Dorian's vision was expanding as it never had before. The Night Angel would flee to Caernarvon, and his powers were growing. But he wasn't using them.
"What are you doing, boy?"
Dorian grabbed onto that life and followed it backward. He'd spoken with Kylar once, and had prophesied his death. Now he knew why he hadn't also foreseen that this Night Angel would die and wouldn't die. Durzo had confused him. Dorian had seen Durzo's life intersecting with other lives. He had seen, but he hadn't understood. He was tempted to try to follow Durzo's lives back to the first life, when Durzo had received the Kakari that Kylar now bore. He was tempted to see if he could find Ezra the Mad's life. Surely such a life would burn so brilliantly he couldn't miss it. Maybe there he could follow Ezra, learn what Ezra knew, learn how he had learned it. Ezra had made the Kakari 7 centuries ago, and the Kakari had made Kylar immortal. It was only 3 steps to one of the most respected and reviled magi of history.
3 steps. To find someone so famous who had been dead so long. It was tempting. But it would take time, maybe months. But oh, the things he could learn! The things I could learn about the past while the present falls apart. Focus, Dorian, focus!
Climbing back into Kylar's life, Dorian followed it from his youth in the Warrens, his friendship with Eline and Jarl. Jarl's rape, Eline's maiming, Kylar's first kill at 11, Durzo's apprenticeship, Mama Kay's instruction, Count Drake's softening influence, Kylar's friendship with Logan, meeting again with Eline, stealing the Kakari, the coup at the castle, killing his master, and finding Roth Ursul.
"My little brother," Dorian thought, "and as much of a monster as I once was." "Focus, Dorian!"
He thought he heard something, a yell, some motion in the mundane world. But he wouldn't let himself be distracted again. He was just starting to get somewhere. There! He watched as Kylar poisoned Mama Kay for justice and gave her the antidote for mercy. He could know what choices a man made, but without knowing why, Dorian wouldn't be able to guess which way Kylar would turn in the future. Kylar had already taken less obvious routes, impossible routes. Given the choice of taking his lover's life or his mentor's, he'd chosen to give his own. The bull had offered each of its horns, and Kylar had vaulted over the bull's head. That was the Kylar that mattered. In that moment, Dorian saw Kylar's naked soul.
"Now I have you, Kylar. Now I know you."
There was a sudden pain in Dorian's arm, but now that he had a firm grip on Kylar, he wasn't letting go. Kylar had synthesized the cruel realities of the street with the pious impulses Count Drake had somehow infected him with.
Infected?
The word came from Kylar.
"So, like Durzo, he sometimes saw mercy as weakness."
"You are going to be damnably difficult, aren't you?" Dorian laughed as he watched Kylar dealing with Cairnavon's incompetent Sakage, as Kylar picks herbs, as he pays taxes, as he will fight with Eileen, as he tried to be a normal human being. But he isn't doing well. The pressure is building. Kylar takes out his wet boy greys, goes out on the roofs. Funny. He does that regardless of the choices he makes up to this point. And then, one night, there's a knock on the door, and Jarl shows up to stretch Kylar on another crux between the woman he loves and the life he hates, and the friend he loves, and the life he ought to hate, and one duty and another duty, and honor and betrayal. Kylar is shadow in twilight, a growing colossus with one foot planted in the day and another in the night. But a shadow is an ephemeral beast, and twilight must either darken into night or lighten into day. Kylar opens the door for Jarl. Futures crashing.
"Damn it, Dorian!"
Fi'ir is slapping him. Dorian was suddenly aware that Fi'ir must be about to do it several times because his jaw had throbbed on both sides. Something will be seriously wrong with his left arm. He looks. Confusion's crashing in his head, trying to find the right speed of time. There was an arrow sticking out of his arm, a black-baited Caladoran Highlander's arrow. Poisoned. Fi'ir slapped him again.
"Stop! Stop!"
Dorian said, waving his hands around. It made his left arm blossom into pain. He groaned and squeezed his eyes shut. But he was back. "This is sanity."
"What's happened?"
he asked.
"Raiders," Fi'ir said.
"A bunch of idiots trying to take something home to brag about," Solon said.
Something, of course, would have been Solon's, Fi'ir's, and Dorian's ears. One of the four corpses already wore two ears dangling from a necklace. They looked fresh.
"They're all dead?"
Dorian asked.
"It was time to do something about that arrow."
Solon nodded, unhappily, and Dorian read the story of the brief battle around their camp. The attack had come as Fi'ir and Dorian were setting up camp. The sun was dipping into a notch in the Faultier Mountains, and the raiding party had come from the mountains, thinking the sun would blind them. Two archers tried to cover their friend's approach, but the shot was steeply downhill, and their first arrows had missed. After that, the outcome had been a foregone conclusion. Solon was no mean hand with a sword, and Fi'ir, mountainous, monstrously strong and quick Fi'ir, was a second echelon blademaster. Solon had let Fi'ir handle the swordsman. He'd been too late to save Dorian taking an arrow, but he had killed both archers with magic. The whole thing had probably taken less than 2 minutes.
"The pity is they're from the Curach clan," Solon said, nudging one of the black-tattooed youths. They'd have happily killed the Hurago clan bastards guarding the Caladoran baggage train we're following.
I thought Screaming Winds was impregnable, Fi'ir said. How'd the raiders get on the side of the border?
Solon shook his head. It drew Dorian's attention to his hair, which was a flat black, except at the roots. Since Solon had killed 50 Meisters by using Curoch, and nearly killed himself from the sheer amount of magic he'd used to do it, his hair was growing in white. Not old man salt and pepper white, but a snow white that struck a sharp contrast against a face that showed a man in his prime, handsome with olive, sethy skin, and features chiseled from a military life. Solon had complained at first that his vision was either all in wild colors or black and white from using Curoch, but that seemed to have cleared.
Impregnable, yes, Solon said. Impassable for an army, yes. But this late in the summer, these young men can climb the mountains. Lots of them die on the climb, or storms come up out of nowhere and wash them off the rock. But if they're lucky and strong, nothing stops them. You ready with that arrow, yet, Dorian?
Though all three men were magi, there was no question of them helping him. Not with this. Dorian was a Hoth-Salar, a brother of healing. His hopes to cure his own growing madness had driven him to the healer's highest ranks. Water suddenly soaked Dorian's arm around the arrowhead.
What was that? Fi'ir asked, looking green. All the moisture from the blood that's already poisoned. It should all stick to the arrow when you pull it out, Dorian said. Me? Fi'ir asked, the squeamish look on his face totally at odds with his huge frame.
You're ridiculous, Solon said. He reached over and ripped out the arrow. Dorian gasped, and Fi'ir had to catch him. Solon stared at the arrow. The barbs had been bent down flat so they wouldn't tear flesh on their way out, but the shaft was covered in a black shell of blood, and the poison coaxed into a crystalline structure. It had swelled the shaft to 3 times its original width. Even as Dorian was heaving breaths in and out, flows of magic began dancing in the air like tiny fireflies, like 100 spiders spinning glowing webs, tapestries of light. This was the part that impressed the other men. Theoretically, any magus could heal himself, but for some reason, it not only tended not to work well, but was also intensely painful to heal more than the smallest wound. It was as if the patient had to feel every pain and discomfort and irritation and itching that a wound would have inflicted in the entire time it was healing. When a magus healed someone else, he could numb the patient. When he healed himself, numbing anything could lead to mistakes and death. Female mages, magi, on the other hand, had no such problems. They routinely healed themselves.
You're incredible, Solon said. How do you do that?
It's just focus, Dorian said. I've had lots of practice.
He smiled and shook himself as if casting off his weariness, and suddenly his face was animated and he was totally present with them in a way that was becoming rare.
Solon looked bereaved. Dorian's madness was irreversible. It would grow until he was a babbling idiot who slept outside or in barns. He would come to be totally disregarded and have only 1 or 2 moments of lucidity each year. Sometimes, those moments would come when no one was around for him to tell what he had learned.
Stop it, Dorian told Solon. I've just had a revelation.
He said it with a little smirk to let them know it really had been a revelation.
We're going the wrong way. At least you are, Dorian said, pointing to Fi'ir. You need to follow Curoch south to Siora.
What do you mean? Fi'ir asked.
I thought we were following the sword. Anyway, my place is with you.
Solon, You and I have to go north to Screaming Winds, Dorian said.
Wait,
Fear said.
But Dorian's eyes had glazed again. He was gone.
Lovely,
Fear said.
Just lovely.
I swear he does that on purpose.